Welcome to this demonstration, developing a SQL Server 2012 tabular project with SQL Server Data Tools. I'm Peter Myers, I'm a SQL Server MVP and a mentor with SolidQ. So the demonstration is going to create a tabular project using SQL Server Data Tools, so let me go ahead and launch SQL Server Data Tools. Before I go ahead and create the project, I want to point out to you that on the Tools options, we now have the ability to define some defaults that are relevant to tabular projects that are being developed here in this environment. So first of all, under data modeling, we can specify what the instance will be that will host the default workspace database. So be aware that all of the modeling work that you do, loading data and managing the model, is also being done on an instance of analysis services. So it is a recommendation that you have an instance available. Perhaps the developer's edition could be installed on the developer's workstation itself. In this case, it will be the local host. The second point for configuration will be the deployment option. So by default, when a new project is created, it will inherit the server that you have specified here. There's no need in this demonstration to update either. But now when I go ahead and create a new project, so here under the analysis services templates, I have the analysis services tabular project. And so I'm going to name this project the Sales Analysis. And this project will produce a model to allow us to analyze the sales of the AdventureWorks bicycle company. Let me just spell that correctly. So what we discover then in Solution Explorer is that a tabular project consists of a single model. And that's it. There's that one relationship of a single model per project, and when the project is deployed to the server, it results in the creation of a database. Now, for those that are familiar with PowerPivot, there are many, many similarities. In fact, they're based on the same technology and the same development approach. However, with PowerPivot being an add-in to Excel, you may well appreciate that it uses that familiar ribbon interface, which is not a feature of Visual Studio. So while we have very much the same functionality that you have in the PowerPivot window, it's expressed in terms of the menus that you have in Visual Studio. So the starting point then to develop the model is to come to the model menu and to import from a data source. All right, all of the data sources supported by PowerPivot are also available to us as developers here inside SQL Server Data Tools. So the AdventureWorks database is actually based on SQL Server, so I select it. I define the location for the server, and using Windows Authentication, I select the database, which happens to be the AdventureWorks DW Denali database. I always like to update the friendly name as well, so it consists of just the name of the database. The second step then in the table import wizard is to define the impersonation information. So this is different from PowerPivot. This step doesn't exist because it's using your credentials to connect to data stores. Once the project is deployed to the server, of course, we don't necessarily want it to use the server's account. The best practice would be that you would specify a dedicated domain account that would have principal least privilege to read the data in the corresponding data source. For convenience and brevity in this demonstration, I'm going to use the server's account. So I click Next. Then we have the ability, because this is a relational data store, to import from a list of tables on views or to define a query to import from. The first phase will be to import from existing tables in the database. So the first table that I choose will be the DIM employee table. And here for the friendly name, I provide the friendly name of salesperson. Under preview and filter, we have the ability to explore the data and also filter by column and by rows. And this is important. You don't want to introduce unnecessary data into the model because it will simply consume resources that could otherwise be used elsewhere. So I deselect all columns. Of interest to this model development is the employee key, the parent employee key. So be aware there's a self-referencing relationship working here that supports the definition of the organizational hierarchy that sales representatives report to managers, directors, and so on. In addition to these two keys, we need to be able to describe the salesperson. So I introduce the first name and the last name. And then I'm going to apply a filter. Because these are all of the employees at the AdventureWorks company, and this is sales analysis, I'm only interested in those employees where the salesperson flag is true. So now with these selected columns and this filter, this will define my first table in the model named salesperson. The second table that I'll import at the same time is the Fact Reseller Sales table, which I will rename to become simply Sales. Likewise, I click Preview and Filter. My intention isn't to bring in all of the columns, so I am selective just to introduce the product key, order date key, ship date key, and then I want the reseller key. Let's see. Don't even need the reseller. I'm going to keep this really simple. Employee key, and then a couple of measures. What is the total product cost, and what is the sales amount? All right, so in this single table import wizard process, I'm importing two tables. Now I click Finish. The wizard will create the tables, and then according to my filters, go ahead and load the data into them. So we can see statistics, the number of rows that have been loaded, in addition to details that confirm that relationships were identified, and in this case, because it was a self-referencing relationship that is not supported natively in tabular models, it has not been imported. However, the relationship between the DIM employee table and the factory seller sales table has been identified and has been created as a relationship in the model. Okay, so we can see here in this designer, for this model we have two tables in the bottom left corner, salesperson and sales. And so just to appreciate that the data that's been loaded in here is completely read-only. All right, what I can do is filter the data. So let's take a look at all of the rows where the employee key is 272. Let's sort them in descending order of sales amount. And this is lightning fast, and I like to point this out, although it's difficult with such a small amount of data. We presently have, I think, 60-odd thousand rows of data, and this filtered set is 792 rows. All right, it could be that I have 60 million rows of data, and providing that we have adequate resources, i.e. memory, then those filtering and sorting would be instantaneous, as you just saw. So do appreciate this technology using the VertiPack engine, or the in-memory query mode, is incredibly efficient when it comes to storing this data, and then for allowing us to filter and aggregate the data at query time. Let me go ahead and remove those filters and reset that sort. Okay, and a new feature in the model designer, available in Power Pivot also, is the diagram view, which is somewhat intuitive when it comes to database developers building these models, is that they might choose to work in this visual diagram view rather than the grid data view. Right, now what I'm going to do is import some more data to make this model a little more interesting. So on the model menu, I go to open existing connections, and to relaunch the table import wizard, I simply select that data connection I defined earlier and open it. So this time in the table import wizard, I select this option to write a query. And the purpose of this query will be to introduce the product data. Now I could write a valid select statement here, or of course use my favorite tool and copy and paste it into this box. For convenience, I simply click Design. And what this allows me to do is to go ahead and construct a query by drag and drop or multi-selection. So for example, I bring in from the product table its product key, the English product name, and the color. And because I know there are relationships to other tables, I can introduce columns from the subcategory table and also the category table. To test this, I can run the query. This all looks great. And so it's this query result that will then be used to create the next table in my model. So I like to take it a step further as well. To rename columns, I can do that here in the query itself, and that's completely up to you. You can also rename at model level, but I'm choosing to alias these columns at this point. And now when I click Finish, this introduces a third table based on the same data connection I defined for the other two tables. So now here in diagram view, we see the addition of the product table. So we don't have a relationship between sales and product, however there is indeed a relationship. The product key here relates to the product key in this table. So what I can do is simply drag and drop to establish that relationship in my model. Now what's very cool to appreciate is that this product data could have come from a different data source, even a different data format. But once introduced into this tabular model, it's like any other data and it can be easily integrated simply by defining these relationships. Now I need to introduce one more table, and that is to allow me to analyze by date. And so in this demonstration, what I have is a data feed. And so the date data that I need lives in an OData feed that I'm going to obtain by copying the URL. So switching back to my project, this time from the model menu, import data from data source, and when I scroll right down to the bottom, we see that feeds are an available type. So what I do is I paste in the URL to the data service, and I call this the AdventureWorks data service. The next step in the table import wizard is to define the credentials that will be used to connect to that service. And again, for convenience in this demonstration, I use the service account. And I click Next. It interrogates the service and discovers there's a single feed named Corporate Date. Now, for the purpose of my model, I rename that to Date, and then in the preview and filter, I make a selection of the columns that I want to include in my table. So I'm interested in analyzing by fiscal date. So I bring in the date key that will be used in relationships. I can bring in the month key and the month label. And when I scroll across, we see that we also have the fiscal quarter label and the fiscal year label. And then I click Finish, and that results in the creation of my fourth table for date and the import of the fiscal data. So now to create relationships between the sales table and the date table, it's the same thing, but what we notice is that I actually have two date keys, the order date key and the ship date key. So I create the first one by dragging the order date key column to the date key column. And a new capability for tabular model development here in SQL Server 2012 is that we can establish multiple relationships between two tables, or indeed two paths. Now what you'll note is that the second relationship that I created is indicated by using a dashed line. And what it means is that the first relationship is active, and other relationships between the two table paths must be configured as inactive. Now an inactive relationship is not used by default, but can be used explicitly in calculations. And so if you stay tuned for the following demonstration where we explore the new features in Data Analysis Expressions, or DACs, we'll take a look at how we can create some explicit calculations that will navigate this type of inactive relationship. Okay, so I'm at the point where I have my fundamental model. What I refer to as the next phase as the enrichment can be achieved by making the model more optimized for end-user experience. So what I do is I right-click my date table, and then I select Go To. And this switches me across to the data grid view. All right, so what I'm going to do in data grid view is optimize the date table first of all by coming into the table menu, and then we'll see here that we have this option to mark this as a date table. Well, in fact, I have made a mistake in my demonstration already, and that is that it's disabled. And the reason for this is that a requirement for marking a date table is that you must have a column of type date, which I omitted by mistake. It's easily fixed, however. So here on the table menu, I open up the table properties and I reconfigure the filter selection and I introduce that date column. All right, so now that I have the date column appended to this table, I can now come across to that table menu and then mark this as a date table. And it's that date column that stores the date. And now that provides intelligence and metadata about how date is defined within our model. So this will do a couple of things. It will support the time intelligence functions that are part of DACs. The second thing is, if you're using Excel and a pivot table to filter this, it will know that this is a date column and it will provide you date-related filter functions. The next thing that I'm going to do is point out that the month labels here, if we go to filter them, we get to see that the distinct values that are available for filtering are actually sorted alphabetically and not, as we would like, chronologically. All right, so another great new feature in 2012 is the ability to sort a column by the values in another column, and this is why I introduced the month key column. So this is pretty straightforward to configure. Here on the column menu, I can say sort by column. So the month label will sort by the values in the month key. And now what we see is we attempt to filter the month label. we will now see that those distinct values are indeed sorted chronologically. So a bit of a cleanup at this point. I'm going to ensure that these two columns, so the date key itself, which is used to support the relationship to the sales table, and that month key, I right-click them and I hide them from client tools. It's not my intention that end users should even know that they exist. This date column here that was added in my second take, I go ahead and I hide it also. All right, that leaves me then these three columns of month label, fiscal quarter label, and fiscal year label. So the last optimization I have for this table is to provide more user-friendly names. So I right-click, rename each of these columns so that they're named month, quarter, and year. And there's one more thing I need to do, because as you might appreciate, it's very common for people then to navigate from a year to a quarter to a month. So this ability now available to us in tabular model development to define a hierarchy to support navigation and the aggregation at different levels. So I switch across to the diagram view. So let me just point out to you that here in the bottom right corner, we have the ability to switch to diagram view as well. And what I can do is come to the date table, and then here in the right corner, I can go ahead and maximize it. So when I maximize it, I have a full view. And what we see is that this table consists of six columns, three of which are visible. And then what I'm going to do is multi-select these three, right-click the selection, and create a hierarchy from the selection. And what we see is the addition of a hierarchy, which I will rename to become fiscal, consisting of the levels of year, quarter, and month. And you might ask yourself, I'm scratching your head at the same time, how did it know to sequence those levels, year, quarter, month? And the fact is, it does use built-in intelligence to look at the values and the cardinality of data between the columns. And if you have sufficient data, it may well, and hopefully, detect the correct sequence. Now, if it doesn't, what you can do is simply drag and drop these to sequence the columns correctly. Okay, so now that I have this defined, I'm then going to multi-select these columns and hide these. So all that will be visible to client tools using the date table in this model will be a fiscal hierarchy consisting of the levels of year, quarter, and month. Okay, next I move on to the optimization of the product table. So let me go ahead and maximize the view here. I already renamed these columns. I was a little bit tricky when I created the select statement. I simply aliased the columns, and that saved me the task of renaming them here. So to create that hierarchy, let me go ahead and multi-select the three columns and then create a hierarchy based on these. And again, we get to see that the sequence of the columns is correct. There was sufficient data for it to detect that category is the first level, subcategory is the second level. So I provide a more intuitive name for the hierarchy, and then I go ahead and hide all columns with the exception of the color. And that completes the optimization of my product table. Now for salesperson, what we have are the two keys and the first and last name, but what I'd like is a single column that brings together both first and last name. Now calculations are something that cannot be performed in diagram view. So I right-click the table, go to switch across to the grid view, and then to add a calculated column, I simply come in here in the formula bar, I enter equals, click the first name column, concatenate a space, and then click the last name column. All right, and then I rename this column to become salesperson. And last optimization then will be to multi-select all columns except the new one and hide them from the client tools. So now switching back to diagram view, we can see that the salesperson table consists of a single column named salesperson. So that brings our attention to the final table for optimization, being the sales table. Okay, well the sales table being based on a fact table really consists of dimension keys and the measures, the two measures being total product cost and sales amount. So what I'm going to do is switch across to the diagram view, because I just made mention that calculations need to be done in this grid view. And calculations come in two forms. For tabular model development, you have calculated columns that are the addition of new columns to the table. And then down here in this area of the designer is what's known as the calculation area, or the measure grid, is where we define a second type of calculation known as a measure. Now, measures are very, very different because their context is driven by the filter context of a query. And measures almost always involve aggregation. So when it comes to analyzing sales and cost, we typically want the sum of sales, the sum of cost by a type of a certain time period or a product or a salesperson. So to facilitate the creation of these measures, I can multi-select columns, and then we have this ability on the toolbar to go ahead and create the sum of them. And what you'll see is that the calculations are added into this measure grid area. So the selection of this cell will show us on the formula bar that the measure is named sum of total product cost colon equals some DAX expression, which in this case is the sum of the total product cost column. So what I'm going to do is rename this just to become cost. So let me point out to you that when I open up the properties window, so I press F4, the selection of a measure it's having a little bit of a think about this one, I'm not sure why. Okay, that's a little unusual. So what's happened is I've renamed the measure cost. I pressed enter. You can see here on the status bar that it's attempting to commit that to the database. So there's some delay going on inside my virtual machine. Okay, it's caught up. That's an unusual delay. So what we now find is this measure named cost. So I've opened up the properties window here in the bottom right corner. So we can update the measure name here. We see that we have properties like format. Because this is currency, we have currency symbol, we have decimal places. And what I'm going to do then for the second measure, sum of sales amount, is rename it simply to sales. And we'll see that it's also format currency. Why are these both currency? Well, they're based off columns that use the currency data type. So what I'm going to do is introduce some additional measures. For example, what I'd like here is profit. So profit colon equals sales subtract cost. So there's the addition of a third measure, and then I'll come across to the property window and update its format to currency. And then one further measure will be the profitability. And profitability is computed by dividing the profit measure by the sales. And this time the format property for this measure will be set to percentage. Now what's very cool is in the measure grid you actually get to see values. So for example, if I filter by employee and say show me employee 272, we get to test in a limited way what the result of these measures will be. I say limited because it's limited by filtering by columns in the same table, not by other tables that relate to the table. We will explore that later by analyzing in Excel. Let me go ahead and reset that filter. There's one last thing that I need to do to enhance that measure, and that is to create a KPI based on the profitability measure. So the KPI is based on the measure. We can compare to another measure in the model, but I'm going to use the value of itself. And I'm going to create some thresholds here that says that if profitability is zero or less, it's well off track, it's in the red zone. Anything between 0 and 0.05, in other words, 5%, is slightly off track, and anything above is on track. And I can also change the icon style here. So when I click OK, we get to see that this measure includes this icon to show me that is in fact also a KPI, that it allows us to compare to a goal and to express a status. So now what I can do is select all columns in this table, and I can hide them. They're not relevant. The sales table will express now four measures, one of which has been extended to become a KPI, and we see that here in the diagram view. So how do we test this? Well, I think this is a great feature of this designer, is that when it comes to testing, it does require that you have Excel installed, but what developer doesn't have Excel installed? So we can go ahead and here on the model menu, analyze in Excel. We have the ability to analyze using a different security context. Perspectives are a new feature that have been added to support narrowing down the visibility of a large model into smaller subject area perspectives. I don't have either, so I'm not going to go ahead and change the configuration of this. I click OK. And what this does then is it downloads or opens up an Office Data Connection file that points to the workspace database on our Analysis Services instance. What that means to Excel is it will create a pivot table in a worksheet that will connect to it. And so now when I look at Excel, here is the pivot table field list here on the right-hand side, and then I can go ahead and create a report. For example, go ahead and show me sales and profit and profitability, and then from my KPIs, I'd like to know what the status of that profitability is. It's so simple. All right. Now what's interesting about a tabular model is it exposes a multidimensional interface. Excel does not even know that it's communicating to a tabular model. The fact that a tabular model exposes this multidimensional interface, consisting of measures, KPIs, dimensions, and hierarchies, means that existing OLAP client tools continue to work, as they have been designed to work against cubes. So to provide some more context here, we can filter. So here in my date dimension, or so the pivot table thinks is a dimension, I can take the fiscal hierarchy and drag it into the report filter. And then I can filter by a period of time. For example, and here is what our fiscal hierarchy looks like. In 2004, go ahead and show me what was going on in the month of October. And then from our products hierarchy point of view, I drag that down to the rows, and now we can see that bikes are off track, and we can explore for this time period what was going on for the different products. Just to complete the demonstration, I just want to point out that there are other capabilities that I don't have time to explore here in this recording, but we do have that ability in a tabular project to define roles. So we can limit visibility to different groups of users based on static or even dynamic expressions. For example, you can only see the data that relates to the sales territory that you are from. In addition, we can define partitions. So this is a great scalability feature that allows us to create partitions at table level and therefore refresh or process data at a lower level than the entire table itself. So it's there for manageability. So that pretty much concludes this demonstration on developing a tabular project. Thank you very much for watching.